Hi, this is Cheryl. Is anybody else on?
Rick Wason is here.
Hey, Rick, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. You all set for Christmas season?
Oh, I suppose.
Who just joined, please?
Dinah.
Hey, Dinah, welcome. Yourself, myself, Stag, Rick Wasner, and possibly others who are lurking.
Tell Steve and Kyle we're sorry about the horse not vetting in.
Yeah, that was a hard one. I picked up Kyle at the airport around 4.
Yeah.
And needless to say, you know, it's a new experience for him, and he's pretty, you know.
That would be
hard.
Pretty much a downer.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, I'll tell him I can really empathize with him after my experience in 94 when, I mean, I got the start. But
yeah, you at least got the start.
We knew the horse, you know, had been injured in the...
In transit,
and so, you know, it was an iffy thing. Of course, he got pulled at the first vet check, but...
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
I remember a race of champions going all the way out to Utah and not starting, so...
Yeah.
It's not a fun thing.
Not fun at all, but it, unfortunately, is part of the sport. I gather he had a shoulder problem, or...?
That's what they thought over there. He left here, actually, and Stewart, among others, vetted him out here before he left, and he looked good, but he didn't look good when he was there, I guess.
Yeah,
so he seemed to warm out of it, but not enough. So.
Yeah, that's rough.
And it's always iffy to start a horse that isn't
yeah.
right. I mean, what's the pleasure of that?
Yeah, I fully understand and agree.
That's the side of things.
The team pulled together and did a good job. So.
Yeah, I think so.
It was totally remarkable how it all, in some senses, did hang tough.
Yeah, Rick, I don't know whether you were following all the
machinations and issues and opportunities and.
Yeah, they just had the, I guess it was the youth world championship, right, Dinah?
Correct, young rider.
And Dubai, and one of Steve and Dinah's horses was supposed to be ridden by Kyle, who rides for Steve and Dinah. But unfortunately, the horse didn't bet in because of something happened to the shoulder, I guess, in transit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And but the three, so U.S. only started 3 horses.
Yeah, they were originally going to ship 5. One of them didn't get out of
country
the United
States.
Because
of a paperwork issue and or vaccination issue. But the U.S. game got 4th out of, 18 teams, I think. And so the 3 that started all did a real good job and finished and rode smart. So it's encouraging, given, unlike some of the other countries, we don't have full-time professional youth rider teams working together for year or more. So it was a good showing.
Well, we've given people 3 minutes. Do you want to give them a couple more just on the theory?
Oh. Yeah, Don Marsh had said he would probably be on, right?
Yeah. And there's virtually always lurkers.
And then there are a lot of people, I think Cheryl may have mentioned, a lot of people, because we put them up on the web, they don't come in real time. They listen to it afterwards. Like I know Lynn Canelli always listens, but she's almost never on the call. And
well, that's good because Lynn can, ask questions that are completely difficult.
I hadn't thought about that aspect.
I hope he listens to this.
No, Ricky, you
I'll pay
now
for
have
it
a challenge.
Yeah.
So what all is happening at Kingsland, Georgia, or wherever?
We got Kyle home. Steve's coming in around 10, so I'm going to go back to the airport for him.
Oh, wow.
Then I go down to Gothy for as TD of the Gothy ride.
Steve and Kyle aren't riding then?
They're riding. It turns out I can do TD.
Oh, you can?
Because, yeah.
Seriously, you can.
Yeah, because I don't have any contact with them.
Wow, phenomenal.
I mean, there's no way I can give them an advantage.
Well, under those circumstances, I'm going to plan on having you a CD for Biltmore from now until eternity.
Oh, God. They just asked me to do, what is it called, Foxcatcher?
Yeah, but Foxcatcher.
Atlanta's right, anyway. And I just, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to get from the Virginia 100 to Lana's Ride if Steve is driving south and I'm going east. And we have one rig.
When is the Virginia 100,
Donna? And I'm not sure I can pull it off.
So you're talking the Homestead 3-day?
I think
that's yeah. Yeah.
When is that?
When is the Homestead this year? Oh, let me look.
It's April.
It's the same. I think it's like it ends on the 12th, if that's any help.
Of April.
Yeah.
We've never done that. That might be a...
Oh, my God, Stag. It's just amazing.
Yeah, that might be a... We ought to come up and...
I think that is probably, in some ways, our favorite ride.
Do they allow little ponies?
Of course.
Well, actually, Jake Technic's not a pony.
He's not a pony.
Actually,
well,
they don't.
A pony.
They do have
they
a minimum
test.
Size.
Do they care about drugs? We'll have Stag up on Chrome if they don't care about drugs.
They don't care about drugs for people.
Well, okay.
They do. They're a little funky about drugs for horses, yeah.
Oh, well.
Comes on his quarter dog pill a day. He's the one that had the street nail surgery.
Yeah, no, I don't think...
It's a
3-day 100. It's like any other one. I'm just trying to check these dates, make sure I'm giving you the right information.
Soon enough before Biltmore, I could pry Cheryl out of North Carolina.
Yeah, you might be able to get me out for that. Foxcatcher, I think, is the weekend after that. You're right.
Vetten is on the 9th. Awards are on the 12th.
Okay.
And that's also the third day.
Right.
And then I've got to figure out how to get over to Foxcatcher if I'm going to do it, because that's a Thursday.
Is Foxcatcher going to be FEI?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a 2-star. I just don't know that I can – the transportation is an issue, so I'm going to have to figure out what to do about that. So.
Now, that one, in some senses, is a conflict with Biltmore. That's interesting.
Foxcatchers?
Yeah, because it's within 2 weeks.
But it's only 50 miles.
It can't be a 2-star if it's 50.
Yes, it can. Can't be a 120. It could be a 120. I'm sorry. You're right.
It can be. You're right.
I think it's a 1- and 2-star. I would have to look and see what they were asking for.
Oh, well. I ought to invite myself to be a steward there just because.
Why don't you do that?
Yeah.
Why don't you come to the Virginia 100, ride the 100 or the 50, whichever you want to do.
Then tag home with the rig and the horses, and I'll come.
And then you and I can trundle off to the ride.
Yes, that sounds like a plan.
Okay.
Anyhow, let's get this call.
I'm ready whenever you are.
Okay. Rick, so you know, and Dinah, you can make it more formal. You may or may not have met Dinah at rides. Dinah, and I've known Dinah now for years and years and years and years, heaven help me, and I bought one of my horses from her. But Dinah has ridden tens of thousands of miles in competitive trail, done thousands and thousands of miles in endurance, been on lots and lots of different teams pretty darn successfully, and more recently... You've gotten into dressage just to keep yourself, your body more or less whole still, I think, and Paralympic dressage, and been doing pretty well at that. Why don't you finish off the introduction yourself, if you don't mind? I'll just turn.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Just to back up a little bit, I had a pretty serious horse accident when I was in my early 20s. And so I've been lame all of my life, pretty much, my adult life. And so I've had a lot to overcome, let's say, as far as trying to keep my horses balanced and my self-balance on the horse. So that's why I think Stag asked me to approach this subject, because if I can do it, I think he thinks anybody can. And I do think that that is true. I think that it's a lot easier for some people than others, but the first step is awareness. And this is not about dressage. Do you actually have the slides available?
Yes.
Okay. So if you go on to the one that starts with forward, are you on the website? Are you on the are you doing the PDF?
PDF.
Okay. Then we can go through that together. Okay. If you go to the one that says forward, this is an interesting subject, because I think when people think about balance with the horse, they think about forward and backward more often than they think about what I think is the bigger concern. And you may have scanned through these, you may not have. But when a horse is going fast or over jumps, you want to stay sort of perpendicular to the ground. So when the front end comes up, or, you know, like going up a hill, we know about all that stuff. You know, we do make adjustments. I bet you've seen riders that over-adjust. Like they go up a hill and they're three-quarters of the way up the horse's neck. Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, a lot of this is just common sense. So if you go to the second, where okay, you've got a chestnut horse on the left with a couple of arrows,
mm-hmm.
basically saying, okay, this is a horse, this rider's in a two-point, galloping, probably a three-day eventer. The rider is maybe, by some people's standards, a little far forward, maybe not. If you go to the second horse, it's a gray horse, and you click the arrows, you'll notice that there is not an alignment, which I think is probably more of an issue if we really want to look at it than the fact that this particular rider is back. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Yeah, well,
the rider's feet
are air position.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we can say, but they're successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. They are successful. But they don't ride their own horses most of the time. And their horses are disposable. This particular talk is about having a horse for a long time. It's a decade club sort of point of view, not a race slam and bang and, you know, the one-year wonder kind of things. If we want to talk about that, I probably would be saying some things that are slightly different. What is your goal, Rick?
To get back competing right now is to become a better horseman. I'm taking
okay.
lessons.
I can't think of a better goal. I mean, you just said it all.
Yeah.
So, okay, so then let's look at this third rider. This is a rider that you may or may not know, but I'm not going to tell you who it is. And use the arrows, and you can see, okay, the rider is not vertical like a dressage rider, but the rider is in balance with the whole body of the rider. Do you understand what I mean by that with the blue arrow?
Yeah.
So that's pretty simple. I mean, you know, that's basic stuff. The question gets to be, my horse always goes lame on its left front. Okay, and the confirmation of the horse is good. And the horse is fit. And the horse is, you know, not an orangutan, you know, injuring themselves. Why does this horse go lame on the left front? Well, when you start looking at how people ride, suddenly you can start getting some ideas of one thing that may add to the stress of a particular leg. Because whatever we're doing, we tend to do on a daily basis. We joke about, around here at Smoke Rise Farm, we joke about horses that carry their tail off to the left. We need our right-handed riders to get on them. Horses that carrying the tail off to the right, we need our left-handed riders to get on them. Because whoever's riding this horse is doing the same thing to the horse every single day. And that's not great. And it doesn't even matter how good a rider you are and how centered you are. It's still, there's little things. So we have to be very aware of it. Horses adapt. They're marvelous. I mean, they can put up with so much if they're trained, you know, if the training works out, you know, if they don't hit the wrong rock. But it's a little added benefit if we can, like, help them. So I threw some pictures of some, these were just pictures that people had, that a particular photographer had, that just showed me some stuff when I started thinking about this subject. And I think it's pretty self-explanatory. But let's look at the what I think is the biggest issue for distance riders, endurance and competitive riders, anybody who rides a long time. And that's that no matter how hard we try, we're never going to be right in the middle. This is a dressage rider, and this is somebody who, one might say, you know, can do fancy, do the tricks, do the fancy stuff, but it's not even straight. It's not even close to straight. So that's an issue. And if you look where it starts, it actually can start at the bottom, at the feet. Can you see the difference there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Okay, so here, this is, since it's just a few of us, I can tell you that this is one of the Arab riders. And
I'm sorry, which slide are we on? I got.
Well, oh, I'm sorry. We're on the slide that says, where does it all start?
Okay.
Number.
Okay,
13.
So it's not the bigger issue. It's where does it all start? Got it. Okay.
Yeah, the bigger issue was the dressage rider.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sorry, Donna. Okay, you were saying it starts with the feet. If you look at the feet, got it.
Yeah, it can, or it can start at the shoulders. I mean, look at this guy. I mean, wow. I mean, I almost don't know what to say about this. I mean, the hips are off, the shoulders are off. Yes, he's got his arm in the air, but I mean, that's something to think about. When we do stuff, what are we doing? I mean, when we, you know, ride with one hand, what are we doing? When we are, you know, carrying our water bottle, what are we doing? It changes stuff. I mean, it's in a funny way, if we think more about that we're on a balance beam with our two seat bones sitting there, then it might make us think a little more about being in the middle. Now, when I say on our sitting bones, I don't mean we're grinding them into the saddle. I just mean just as light as a feather, where are they? Just checking in with them on a regular basis. Are they in the place they should be, and not only forward and back, but side to side? So, you know, on this thing, it says at the bottom, any thoughts on how the horse is doing on this? The horse is doing an awful lot of compensating. And, yes, they're brilliant horses, and, yes, they're terrible riders riding brilliant horses. And they can get away with it, but the question is for how long? We have quite a number of decade club horses around here, and I like to think that a horse can do high-level work for 10 years and stay sound. I believe that. And I think sitting in the middle helps. So let's talk about some of the things we do. Okay, so we're going along, and I'm on slide 17 now. we're going along and we go into the zone. Are you have you done some 50s or 100s, Rick?
I've done 150.
Okay. So we're going along, and did you find yourself somewhere in that that 50 miles going, wow, all of a sudden time sort of went into a time lapse, and I'm farther along the trail than I thought I was? Or I don't know if it on 50s how often that happens, but I find when I'm riding, sometimes I go into a, it's almost like a meditative state, and suddenly 10 miles have gone by, and I don't even remember being there. I sort of zone out, as it were. And I wonder if during those periods, if I'm actually doing much of a good job riding, which is kind of why it's nice to have a riding partner that sort of says, get back in the middle. But when we're riding, it can be fatigue. And that, of course, is not helping our horse, who's actually doing more of the work than we are. So being fit when we ride is pretty darn important, and being aware of what our habit is. In this case, somebody is just weighting their left foot. That's as simple as that. I mean, they may be doing very little wrong other than just weighting a foot too much, but the tendency is that it throws everything off. Here is a rider with a card. They have their time card. But you can see that something as simple as that, and this person doesn't have their feet in the stirrups. So that's a natural body position with no stirrup issues. And you can see how twisted we can get just by, you know, holding something in our hands, riding with one hand, not thinking about it.
Yeah, that's one of my bad habits is I've, you know, got very comfortable holding the reins in the left hand.
Well, in Western riding, I was brought up that way. So, you know, you ride with one hand, but honestly, it's the other hand needs to be on the thigh or balanced so that your shoulders don't do what's happening here. And
I also think
there are ways
it's interesting
to fix
that feet are uneven.
Yeah, yeah. And her hips, I mean, if you look,
yeah.
Or you can see that the hip is definitely bulged out to the left. I'm turning myself
mm-hmm.
around on this picture. But and that easily could be just pain. It the longer you go, the worse it tends to be. Now, here's another rider who is consistent top to bottom. Oops, I skipped a slide. Is consistent top to bottom. There is a slant, the same slant going on the top and the bottom.
And
we won't
Rick,
get into who this is either.
Rick, for your information, Dinah's being polite. That's me.
Okay.
Well, if you want to tell
so very,
that's one thing.
One of the things I will say about Stag is he's been very consistent for years and years and years.
Yeah, part slide. Taking a little bit of time from Dinah, but yeah, I mean, I had ridden so much this way that it's what felt centered to me, and what I've been doing, and at least our riding instructor who rode behind me for 40 minutes on our last riding lesson when we went out on a trail ride, you know, so she could watch me, is, you know, I am getting rebalanced, but it took a bunch of things, and one of the things in my case is my vision over the last 10 years had changed dramatically, and I didn't realize, well, I started realizing it because, you know, my distance vision, which had been really good in one eye, had gotten bad, but I started carrying my head off to the side to correct for a vision problem, and so now I have corrected lenses.
That used to be corrected qualitatively. He started carrying his head more off to one side than he had.
Okay.
We have pictures of him in 1990 with his head off to one side.
All right, okay.
I'm
going to
throw one out for you, Stag.
Pardon?
Because I noticed this about your riding, actually, is you tend, unless things have changed, you tend to ride with a very loose harness on your hard hat, yes?
Yeah, all the...
And that means that your hard hat is going wobble, 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 wobble. And I want to just share this little thing with you. I went to about 10 years ago, I went to a chiropractor because I fell on my head, which I do from time to time. And I went off a horse, or the horse fell with me. And anyway, I went to the chiropractor, and he took a picture. He took a X-ray of my neck, and he came out and he said, "Do you have rheumatoid arthritis?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, your neck is a classic rheumatoid arthritis neck." And I said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" He said, "You have all these bony changes on the front side of your neck." I'm like, "Oh, well, that's because I wear a hard hat." I didn't even think about it. I didn't even think about what I was saying. It just sort of came out, as you guys know me. Sometimes things come out. And what I really believe is that I ride with a loose harness too, and it goes jiggle, 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 jiggle. I don't like that hat to be too tight. And what happens is I'm constantly making these little compensations for this loose hard hat. So I've tried to force myself to ride with a firmer hard hat. Just something to think about, because, you know,
yeah,
your head weighs a lot.
Yeah,
and you put a hard hat on top of it, and it weighs more, and then you're looking at the ground trying to avoid the rocks, and you got it out in front of you, and it does all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'll have to work on that.
Well, just something to be aware of, because I know that I do it, and so I noticed that you did it too.
Yeah, all these things make such a difference because, you know, in addition to getting corrective glasses, I spend a lot of time in addition to, you know, creating much better body awareness by working with my riding instructor I've had a combination. Well, I use acupuncture to sort of break through a real left-sided lock, you know, sort of lock in my hip, you know, that whole area through there, and then I followed that with sort of regular exercises and muscle massage therapy and all, but all these things to sort of break through the asymmetry. And I hadn't even thought about the hard hat, but that's a great point. And you are right.
Oh.
I ride with a very loose hard hat.
Here's another one. Let's say Rick, we'll pick on Rick. Let's say, Rick, you're riding down the trail and you have somebody behind you watching how you ride, and you've got to do it more than, you know, 10 minutes, because for 10 minutes you can do it. Ina? Falling into habits. So let's say you're going down the trail and all of a sudden your person who's watching says, "You're actually leaning a little bit to the left, and, you know, your stirrups are uneven, and you're putting more weight, or you're leaning to the left, and you've got your left stirrup is lower than your right stirrup." One of the things you can do on a ride is drop the other stirrup a hole. Unheard of, I know. But in truth, it actually helps.
Well, one thing I can chronically shift in a chiropractor adjustment that would always be longer on the left, and then I would have a trouble and I'd keep wanting to shift my saddle to the right. And I went and got deep tissue massage, and that helped alleviate a lot of that.
Well, that's excellent. That's excellent. Next time you're on a ride, a long ride, and you start wanting to do that saddle shift, because that's really hard on the horse's backs, spike that other stirrup up a hole.
Okay.
So, in other words, you want to shift it to the right, just shorten your left stirrup a hole, or a little bit, and see if it makes you more comfortable. Because once you're on a ride, the big deal is to be comfortably in the middle. And if it means that, you know, because your left hip flexor is tight and getting tighter, you're not going to be able to fix it then, all you can do is try to adjust your tax so that you are still in the middle.
Okay.
Whatever it takes. It's a whatever you take, it takes sort of time when you're on a ride. So we do a lot of stirrup changing. That just shows you how completely imperfect we are. So, okay, so how do you know? How do you know when you're doing it? Well, you don't. Stag brought it up earlier. You know, he had no idea he was riding off to the side. I have no idea unless I look in the mirror. My big thing is looking down. I'm constantly looking at the ground. It's a horrible habit, and it throws my entire weight forward because, you know, what is it, headway? Anybody know? It's a lot. I'm guessing more than 10 pounds, and, you know, you're throwing more than 10 pounds out the front of that horse, and so what are we doing? We're adding more to the front end, you know, those poor front legs, you know, which are what take the beating anyway. So the only way to really handle it is to have somebody watch. So
full developed human head will weigh between 8 and 12 pounds.
Okay.
Somebody just joined it just so that they know we're in the PDF deck on slide 19.
Hello?
Did we lose?
Okay, so now on 20, actually I was looking at 20 and how often and how do we know.
Right.
It's really the best way to do it is to get the feel. And I think that one of the quickest ways is to say, am I on both seat bones? Is my saddle comfortable? Well, I think what Rick brought up of that saddle shifting thing, I mean, it is, I've done it on some saddles for years. And it's, and that, of course, you blame the saddle, but maybe that's not the right answer. Maybe it's the fact that I've got one leg shorter than the other. It's amazing what happens. Like, can you imagine what would happen if you shorted on slide 20, if you shortened the person's left leg up a hole or so?
It looks like it would correct something.
It does, doesn't it? Or drop the other one. I mean, you have to sort of figure out what's comfortable, what works. This concept of riding, and I think this is more common in maybe in dressage than it is in other disciplines. And I certainly carried it over to endurance and distance and competitive riding. Was I rode with a very long stirrup, and I think a lot of us in the trails ride with really long stirrups. And what happens is we can't do it. We end up riding on our toes. And one hole shorter, maybe, will make a huge difference. I'll share something else with you that happens to me. When I live in Vermont a lot of the year, and then I come down to the flatlands of Georgia and Florida for the other part of the year. Well, Vermont is very hilly, and Florida is unbelievably flat. And I find that when I can ride a horse 100 miles in Vermont without a girth sore, without a back problem. I come down to Georgia or Florida, and I do the same 100 miles on the same horse, and I get girth sores, I get back sores. And I started asking myself, what's the deal? I mean, why? And the only thing I can come up with is that in Vermont, we rarely land in the same place twice in the saddle, exactly the same place twice, because of the change of terrain. We're always either, you know, leaning a tiny bit forward, leaning a tiny bit back, we're going up hills, we're going around corners, we're adjusting our bodies all the time. And you get much better ab muscles doing that. Down here, you're up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down, and nothing changes. There are hardly any turns in the trail. There, you know, it's flat. And I think when you ride in the really flat terrain, it is a little better to ride with a little bit longer stirrup.
Well, interesting. I don't know if that's shorter, but You think?
Well, but the problem is that then you're coming up higher and landing harder.
Okay.
Down here, I'm almost thinking that, you know, with the mini post, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're barely coming out of the saddle.
Yeah.
Is less of a, I've been watching the riders down here, frankly, you know, the long, slow rider, the long, slow distance riders.
Right.
To see what they are doing that allows them to get away with no sore backs. And what I've noticed over the years is they ride with fairly long stirrups and they post hardly coming out of the saddle at all.
Okay.
I don't know.
Shift sideways five paces into, say, the Valerie Canavy end of the endurance world in Florida.
Yeah, that's a very different thing.
Yeah.
She's basically galloping. Yeah. She's in a two-point. Valerie rides in a two-point. It's extremely tough on her back, and she's the first one to tell you that she's in extreme pain by the end of the ride, sometimes to the point of not wanting to go on.
Mm-hmm.
She's a short person, and so all the leverages, you know, the upper body, the leg, the lower leg, it's all pretty compact. It's more like a jockey,
mm-hmm.
if you're with me. And so where she is in her body position is not, this is not a put down at all, because she actually, if you ran a plumb line from her shoulder to her heel, she would be in alignment.
Right.
But it's very different than somebody who's 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
Just the angles change. So if somebody who was 6 feet tall tried to ride the way Valerie rode, I would be worried about the horse falling down. If you follow what I mean, because that intense forward seat position is too big. It's
right.
Too big for our little Arab horses. So, I mean, do you follow what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a little bit of a hard picture. The next picture, number 21, is one of my very favorite pictures. We took this when we were in Mongolia. These guys are watching wrestling on television. And I just love how comfortable they are on their horses. And even though they're sprawled all over, I mean, there's one guy who's, you know, lying down on his horse with his elbows, you know, leaning on his horse's butt. They're in the middle. I mean, the guy next to him has his leg over, on the far left, has his leg slung over the horse, the pony's, well, they're horses technically, but the horse's neck. But still, if you look at him, he looks like he's in the middle of that horse. It's just crazy. It's crazy. But then they live there. So in these little, I didn't see very many Mongolians that weren't sort of in the middle. Now, when they went off galloping, they were way behind what we call behind the action. But whatever, you know. And the people that race horses there are all small children. When they go fast, it's all with children that are about seven and under. are the jockeys. These guys would not race. They probably did as kids, but they don't race as adults.
Good.
There are no adult races in Mongolia.
Yes, they consider racing child's play.
Yeah, I mean, they go out and race these things 35 miles with, you know, like 4 to 7 year olds on them. It's pretty amazing. But anyway, so in the middle thing, back to the in the middle thing. It's big. So one of the things that we all have our little pet peeves. My pet peeve is when I hear, you know, I'm going to go buy another saddle. You know, my horse isn't doing well, I'm going to go buy another saddle. I personally would much rather see somebody hire an instructor, you know, with the same old rotten saddle, and see if that can be worked out. Now, if the saddle's truly, truly uncomfortable and, you know, making a hole in the horse on one side because the stuffing is gone or, you know,
well,
the screw sticking through, that's one thing. But in general, you can't blame the saddle. This is actually a Mongolian – oh, no, this is a Turkmenistan saddle. This is what they ride on the Akeltekis.
Now, did you take this photograph?
I did. I just couldn't believe that people actually use saddles like this still.
What was that made of?
Leather.
It is leather.
Yeah. It was nasty, and those horses' backs were just trashed. As trashed as I've ever seen any backs, ever.
Wow.
So, okay, so you can spend some money on lessons, but you can do stuff for free. You can get somebody to take a video of you. Almost everybody has access to a video camera. And it's just a matter of bugging somebody till they just follow you in a car or on another horse and take a video of you. Or go around in circles. But circles aren't great because it doesn't give you a really good straightaway kind of feeling. Standing on two scales, it's stunning. It's stunning how much some of us are off on one side. And it's not that it's such a huge difference. It's that we really think we're balanced. And when we look down, we're not. And it just gives us a little sense of, okay, this is something to think about. There's a guy named Daniel Stewart who wrote a book, and I think it's still out there through Trafalgar Press. But he used to work with distance riders a fair amount, and he would put us on those, you know, remember those, were they bongo boards? Or remember the balance things? They still exist for, like, physical therapy and sometimes in gyms. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yes.
Has like a roller underneath it. It's just a board with a roller. You could make one out of wood. And
was
you stand on, put your weight on each
Vermont.
Side of it. What?
Was he the guy in the Vermont at the Pan Ams that spoke?
Yeah, I think he was at the Pan Ams. But, you know, if you just get on one of those bongo boards and just stand there and close your eyes, you will not.
I'm balancing with my eyes open.
Well, that's where you start. And then you start by, you know, having your knees relaxed, and then you try to do it. It's amazingly good for your body because it will give you some ideas of how to correct and where you're weak, where you're strong. Because sometimes strong is worse than weak. So, or even if you're on a trail ride, you know, you just ask the person behind you, am I in the middle? And if they're a friend, they'll probably tell you you are. And if they're an enemy, they also will tell you you are. But if you can find somebody honest to just really tell you the truth of whether you're in the middle of your horse, it would be good. And this is the one thing that my horse, Phoenix, would like you to know, is to get in the middle of your horse. So, and then that's it. And I'm happy to talk about body position and struggles that people have or don't have or anything I can do, exercises, all kinds of things. If you have anything you want to know that I can share that I know, which may not be anything.
Kind of one thing I would say on the saddle is, you know, that we should always make sure our saddle per se is balanced, and balanced for the horse in the sense that, and you have to for endurance riders, you have to just recheck and recheck. We've had three experiences where, you know, the saddle problem fit the horse well. One case was the tree became twisted. It was a saddle that Super had used for years, and I think what may have happened is when Jeannie trailer out to Tevis. She took our trailer, you know, and drove out to Tevis with Super and her horses. And we think, and they went across the middle part of the country. It was 100-plus degree heat. We think it got so hot in the trailer that the glue, you know, sort of, you know, got liquefied. And the saddle probably wasn't sitting square in the trailer. And so it actually became twisted, which was sort of horrifying in retrospect. And then more recently, and you saw me in Vermont, commented I wasn't square, and I knew I was feeling it there. But there we had had somebody reflock our saddles. And
This spring,
you know, recently, you know, in preparation for Old Dominion in Vermont. And he's supposed to be, you know, is recommended by Kerry Ridgway as being, knowing what he's doing, but he's gotten very sloppy. And it turned out, you know, when you first started riding the horse, it felt good, but he'd actually put uneven amounts on either side. So once, you know, it started getting packed down, the saddle started getting skewed, and we had to have that totally redone. And then the other sort of
nasty
development, Cheryl had a saddle that, you know, worked well on Orion. I mean, he'd won high vet score in a couple of hundreds. But it was one of these saddles with a synthetic tree, and the tree weakens over time. And, of course, if you're, you know, just a casual rider or dressage rider, you know, it'll be good for 10 or 20 years. But if you're an endurance rider, in 2 years, that tree, and so it weakens, and so it becomes like a broken tree. And that's what had happened to Cheryl's saddle that she'd been using on Orion. And as it weakens, then what happens is every stride, all the weight,
it flexes right into his back.
Yeah, and so you're just pinching or putting all the weight.
Well, you know, I mean, we could spend hours on saddles. I mean,
yeah.
I have, oh God, so many opinions on saddles. But I'm a fan. I guess that's the right word. I'm not a fan of saddles because they're so hard to deal with. But I am a fan of saddles that actually flex, as opposed to a rigid tree saddle, though I must admit, on a day-to-day basis, I ride in a rigid tree saddle. I don't know if you guys are familiar with leather trees.
No.
Okay. They actually make trees out of leather. It's an English process. It's layers and layers and layers. And I bought a saddle years ago, and does everybody know how to check for a broken tree? Okay, let's just talk about it really fast. You grab, if it's not a Western saddle, we're talking English saddles here, or English-style saddles, you put the front of the saddle against your belly, and you take the rear of your saddle, the cantle, and you bring it towards your belly. If you can bring it towards your belly, you've probably got a broken tree. So that's a really quick and dirty way of knowing of whether you've got a tree issue. If you have a solid tree saddle, I'm talking fiberglass or wood. Now, one time I bought a saddle and this thing flexed, and I went, oh my God, I've got a broken tree. So I took it to Smith Worthington in Connecticut, and they're great, by the way, if you need a, you know, tree work done on a saddle that you just love. They can go
in other words,
actually,
basically stripping the whole thing down and almost...
Yeah. They make it from scratch, so they can fix stuff.
Yeah.
So they're great. And anyway, they took this thing apart, and they said, you know, this has a leather tree. And so I learned all about leather trees, and I actually had the saddle repaired and rebuilt, to my specifications, with a leather tree. Now the problem with any kind of flexible tree is what you may have experienced with the treeless saddles, which is they work okay if you're trotting and galloping, and they're really, really tough on the horse's back if you're sitting. I don't know if you are aware of that, but they are not good saddles to put your butt into and leave your butt grinding into the horse's back.
Yeah, I believe that.
I mean, it's just sort of pretty obvious, actually, if you think about it. And the leather tree, I have the same hesitation about. I think they're great for distance riding if you're moving along. I will spread that out, actually, even to things like reactor panels, orthoflexes, any kind of saddle with a non-stable tree is not a great sitting on the horse kind of saddle. It's a great galloping saddle, trotting saddle. You know, they may be the right saddle for you, but not if you're going to do a lot of walking, because I think that they really can do some damage. So I might pick a different kind of saddle to go do the Tevis than I would pick to do Fitz.
Yeah, okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. No,
you know, if I was really, really, you know, serious about it and didn't, you know, have to have my saddle, you know,
okay.
I might think about, you know, riding in a different – I certainly would think about different padding.
Excellent.
So.
And going back to your major theme on, you know, balance, probably if you're off balance and you're doing a lot of walking, that's even harder on the horse than trotting or hand galloping.
Well, it's harder on their back. It's not harder on their legs.
Right, but
because,
on the back, I guess. Yeah, is what I...
Yeah, keep in mind, I mean, I try to keep in mind, I load my left foot. I'm loading the left side of that horse, which means he's got to try to pull himself more to the right just to stand up, to compensate for me. And so I'm putting way big stresses on. Now, an example of what happens when you're successful is something like what happened with you and Super. You and Super, you worked him slowly. You started him, you know, you're a very consistent day-to-day rider. I mean, you do your homework. You're not a weekend warrior. You spend the hours and the days and the weeks and the months and the years getting the horse ready to do his job. You don't go into the Old Dominion cold. So the horse has had time to adapt to your body. He might have more trouble with a different rider. If you know what I mean?
Yeah, because he's adjusted to myself. He knows.
Yeah, his right side balance is adjusted to your right side balance, you know, or left side balance, whatever it is. He's adjusted, and it takes a long time.
Actually, you know where that was really obvious, Dinah?
Where?
Is Drubin and I, because of course we had probably more than twice as many miles together as Super, because I did more with Drubin, and Super I've always given a lot of time off because he doesn't have a fundamentally good hoof structure, so he needs more time off. But Drubin was, if you looked at Drubin's muscular development, particularly if you got up on a stepladder behind him and looked down, he was quite uneven in his front shoulder development. And he and I had reinforced each other over the years, you know. So as a pair, we did fine. But, boy, I wish I'd had it over to do so, you know, he would have.
Well, and you may have created that.
Oh, I'm sure I did.
I mean, but it's great. I mean, you know, if it works, it works. But it takes time.
Yeah.
And the heavier the rider you are, I mean, the taller you are, the longer legged you are, it doesn't always work in your favor. You know, it can, you know, the more upper body you've got, you know, as far as, you know, length from waist to top of head, that can really work against you, because it's a lot out there floating around. And if it isn't really stable, it makes it even harder on the horse. So,
yeah.
And to jump back to saddles for 1 minute, because what I wanted to say is it's very important for the rider to be comfortable. I mean, for the rider to be in a saddle that they are miserable, you know, and wiggling or shifting it or struggling with it, is going to work against the horse. It's going to damage the horse's back. It's going to do all kinds of stuff because of the rider fidgeting up there trying to get in a position that isn't painful. So sometimes you have to shift, you have to change what you're doing. But I still try to make sure that I'm not switching saddles because I want a shortcut. I'm switching saddles because I need to switch saddles, or the horse needs me to do something different. I mean, I've ridden in everything from McClellan's to bareback saddles to, you know, Tristan's, Steuben Tristan's to, you know, hard-shelled, you know, switchbacks to Orthoflexes to reactor panels to, God, I mean, you know, so many bizarre saddles. You know, what were those little things that looked like tuffets? Oh, God, they were awful. Remember those?
I gather they were your favorite.
What?
Which one was your favorite to, you know, just for your own creature comfort perspective?
Probably, wow, that's a hard question. I had something called a switchback that was an old-fashioned endurance saddle with a setback stirrup that I rode an awful lot of miles in. Long, slow distance, you know, like the 6.5 to 7 mile kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
An hour thing. And that's a hard pace to do endlessly, and it's back when we absolutely made no variation in pace. That was, I prefer English saddles. I like the freedom of being able to move my leg around a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm not big on the Western skirts, even though I was raised on a Western saddle. I find them very restrictive and tough on my ankles. I don't know. I think it really depends. I think it depends on the horse, too. Some horses just are more comfortable to ride in a saddle that's got a little more lift in the front or lift in the back. You know, those things that can sit down and take off on you. I like a little higher kennel.
I wonder why.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it depends. How about you? Do you have a favorite saddle?
I actually don't think I do right now. I know I don't like treeless. It's like there are certain things that, you know, I'm not going to go there because I've tried them, and it was the one treeless that I tried was under fire, sort of by mistake almost, but it was not a happy occasion. And I don't want to repeat it. Thank you very much.
I found them quite painful.
Yeah. It was the only reason it was tolerable was because I had to tolerate it. End of story.
Yeah.
The stirrup part.
So, well, I mean, what kind of saddle do you ride in, Rick?
Specialized saddle.
Okay, and I've ridden in those. And those are interesting because you can shim them to a body position you like.
And also
it's just hard.
You can move the stirrup letters forward or backwards, according. And
yeah.
Most ready-made, especially in the Western Endurance, I find the stirrups too far forward for me.
I completely agree with you. I think that's one of the great struggles that we have with the saddles that are designed for endurance. They tend to look at the rider and say, okay, well, the riders are riding with their feet out in front of them, so let's put the stirrups out there. And they're just adding to the problem. I mean, if anything, I think that all of us could benefit with a little bit of a backward leg, a longer, more vertical thigh, and a little more of a bounce in our foot, you know, a little more spring. It'd be easier on our joints and certainly make it more pleasant for the horse not to be, you know, falling, which is what the forward stirrups do. And that's the whole position thing again.
What did you mean by a longer vertical thigh?
When you get on your horse, if you get on and don't pick up your stirrups and you ride around a little bit, and then you pick up your stirrups, have you ever noticed how short they feel?
When I pick up the stirrups.
So you get on your horse and you say you just ride around at a walk for, 2 minutes, and then you put your feet in your stirrups.
Okay.
You will find that those stirrups feel really short.
Okay.
And what has happened is you've managed to wrap your thigh around your horse a little longer. And what I mean by vertical thigh is your thigh is actually perpendicular to the ground rather than at an angle out in front of you. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Uh-huh. So basically you've taken the thigh from hip to knee towards the rear of the horse. You slid it, and that's what happens when you ride without stirrups. It slides straight down just because gravity pulls it and the wiggling of the horse.
Yeah, you don't want stirrups that are too far forward.
Yeah, and then you pick up your stirrups and you go, oh, my God, they're so far forward. Well, then you know you've got an issue. You know,
okay.
But if you pick them up and you think, wow, they're short, the goal would be to keep that long thigh and then bend at the knee, and your leg will come behind you a little better and under you a little better. Because when you're sitting in the saddle, and it doesn't matter, other than hunter jumpers, I'm not talking about hunter jumpers here, but it doesn't matter what your discipline, whether you're riding a Western saddle, an English saddle, an endurance saddle, you know, a treeless saddle, you should feel like you're dropping to your knees when you're in your saddle. So if you can picture standing up and like dropping down to the ground, to your knees, like you're just going to drop to your knees, that's what it should feel like. So the shorter your stirrup, the deeper you go, the more your leg is behind you, or you're going to fall down. You have to have that balance. You've got to have those heels under your butt, or you're going to fall on your face or fall on your butt. You just are. I mean, it's worth trying. I mean, if for those of you that are somewhat coordinated, just try dropping to your knees if you can, or even onto something like the couch. You know, drop your knees to the couch. And feel the body position. If you keep your upper body will stay straight, because you can't do it, you'll fall down. So it's interesting anyway. But that is the correct. That's the military, cavalry, Spanish riding school, picket position that we should probably all be in. And then when we're galloping, we keep the same leg position, we keep the same hip position, and we only bend forward at the waist to compensate for, saying, going up a hill, going over a jump, going at high speed where the horse is, you know, the horse's croup has dropped. And so, you know, you've got this huge long stride, and you want to be somewhat flexed at the waist to compensate for that. But if you overlean, you're putting – the horse always has, in nature, has roughly 60% of its weight on its front end. So when you add a rider to it, you're adding a ton more weight onto the front end. So the whole goal of this thing is to not overload the front end any more than we absolutely have to. But that gets into all kinds of schooling and how to get the rear end under the horse, and that's another subject.
Thanks.
Yeah, I hope it made sense.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, we're at 9, so I think we're probably closing in on finishing, yes?
I think.
I think so. Very beneficial. You give
yeah.
me more. You always give me
give
things to work on.
More things
on,
to
Don.
Think about. I've heard this talk before, even, and I still have more things to think
yeah.
about. I don't know that that's fair.
Well, Cheryl, you're
like what Rick said. It's all about becoming a better horseman. And
yeah.
Well, who was somebody said when they finally they were in their 80s? Huh? I forgot who it was. Some famous horseman. He said, "I'm finally getting this figured out, but now I'm too old to ride much."
Yeah.
But I figure we've got 20 more years or so, right, Dinah?
I hope so.
Dinah, I have a question, Dinah.
Sure.
This is Richard White in Oregon.
Hi, Richard.
I came about a half hour late, but I got home and put on the pictures you have. And under the heading Helping Their Horses, you have four horses on the side and one rider in the middle with a red shirt.
Okay, if you tell me the slide number.
It's the one that has five pictures on it.
Okay, let me see if I can find it.
It's
this isn't the PDF. This is the PDF.
It's the only one that has that many horses.
It's number 9, I think.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. You're talking about, yep, there's a whole bunch. Yep, I got it. Helping Their Horses, yep.
Okay, the rider in the center?
Yes.
Okay, besides, let's see, putting her toes forward, what does she need to do to be better balanced?
Actually, she was my example of looking pretty darn good.
Oh, okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, no, she was my example of, you know, she is a tiny bit twisted. One shoulder looks a little tiny bit higher, but she looks pretty darn like she's in the middle of the horse, even though it is.
The horse sure looks good, too.
Yeah, the horse looks good. The horse looks balanced, which is definitely the goal. I mean, it doesn't matter what our discipline is, whether it's reining or Grand Prix jumping. If the horse is out of balance, they're gonna hurt themselves. That's the bottom line. And in endurance, it really shows up. And we are a little negligent on thinking about how throwing our whatever number of pounds on the backs of these animals and not making any effort to balance it is a big problem. It's a big problem. And I would rather give up an eighth of a mile an hour to stay in balance and maybe finish sound. That's sort of my theory, at least.
It seems the faster my horse trots, the easier it is to stay in balance for me. I don't know if it's just my horse.
Say that again. The faster your horse trots what?
The easier it is for me to stay in balance.
Well, when you have impulsion, when you have a push from behind,
yes,
it helps your balance. Because when you have a push from behind, I mean, your horse is using his hind end. He's carrying more back there. Now, the trick here is the more muscle fibers he's activating, the more risk you've got of injury if the horse isn't prepared to do it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I have this, I'll give you an example. I've got this 6-year-old horse, and I've been doing long, slow distances with him. I don't have a 6-year-old horse, by the way. This is all made up. And I'm doing long, slow distances with him, and I'm riding him in the hills of Vermont, and I'm going up and down, and because it's so steep, I really, you know, I can only really do like 6-7 miles an hour. Okay. So, and I take him on a 50-mile up in Vermont, and you know, he top tens. Great. So then I bring him down to Florida, and it's completely flat, and it feels like I'm doing 6 or 7 miles an hour, but really I'm doing probably closer to 10, and I'm still trotting, and then I'm sort of going, well, I could go a little faster because it's flat. So I go 12, and I'm still trotting. I'm running a huge risk of injury. I mean, that's sort of like a no-brainer, right? Not right?
Explain more.
Okay. So the horse, his stride, the length of his stride was, let's say, 20 inches. I'm just throwing something out because I'm really lousy at measurements. What's an average horse length stride? Anybody know?
I want to say Secretariat out of Gallup went...
Oh, yeah, but not Secretariat. I mean, he was 17 feet or something. But Let's say a yard. My horse takes a stride of a yard in Vermont, 36 inches. I bring him down here, and now I'm really asked, it's flat, and I feel like I'm going slower than I am, and all of a sudden I'm taking a stride of, say, 40 inches. The longer the stride, the greater the chance of blowing your suspensory apparatus, because you're stretching the muscles beyond the max that they're used to going. Okay? Horse is used to 36. Now he's doing 40. It's not that the horse metabolically can't do it. He can. He's probably like running at 90 because he's so used to the hills. But he can't do it because of length of stride. So you have to prepare for that too. So, for instance, if it were me, my six-year-old horse, I do a 50 up there, everything's great. I bring him down to Florida. I would canter. I would do a slow canter and do whatever, 12 miles an hour or 15 miles or whatever it is.
Okay.
Having prepared canter also. But a short canter rather than a long trot is a much safer gait. That's all I'm getting at. When you say your horse is more comfortable for you at a fast trot, the questions I have is what is the length of stride and how fast is the turnover of the strides? So Matthew McKay Smith, who you may have heard of, was sort of a grandfather of distance for some of us, used to talk about chief mini steps. And what he wanted in a horse is a horse that took lots and lots of short strides, as fast as he can go, but not a long stride because of the dangers to the tendons and ligaments in the lower leg. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, but I've never realized that was a danger.
Here's an easy exercise that if I'm in a classroom situation, I do this to people, which is probably not nice, but they kind of like it. So after we get off the phone, I want you to just sort of run in place across. Can you run?
Sure.
Okay, well, I can't, so I have to ask. So run in place across, like, your room or just run in place, you know, say 20 feet or something. And then I want you to do the same distance, but I want you to take the longest stride you can take. So you can probably get there in like 3 or 4 strides, right? You're going to take these enormous strides. I want you to think about what your glutes feel like. I want you to think about what your quads feel like. I want you to think about your calves. Just try to feel it both ways and see if you could figure out which one is more stressful.
So you're saying that even these great horses with the really natural long strides we've been looking for that don't have a lot of up and down movement, that maybe they shouldn't be going that fast, they should be galloping more?
When they're conditioned for it, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's lovely to have a horse with a long stride. I think that you're looking. I think a couple things. One is, what is the goal? Is the goal to have the horse for 20 years, 10 years? Is the goal to win the race? Those two are not always compatible. So if, let's say your goal is to top 5, you know, 5 rides. Let's say that's sort of a reasonable goal. If you train at a longer stride than you ride the ride on a regular basis, you're probably safer than if you train for the ride at a shorter stride. Do you understand what I mean by that? So if I go out and I'm doing extended trot, you know, these great long strides, but I only do those at rides, I'm running a higher risk than if I train that at home.
Okay, I get that.
So if that's what you want to do, if you want to use that longer stride, then for sure train for it. I personally would go up into a canter.
Yeah, and
most of the hundreds I've done in my life have been somewhere between 90% and 95% canter.
Yeah, and Diane, if I could chime in here, a couple key points I think Diane's made. The horse should, in competition, be using what I call the middle gates, the comfortable gates.
For that horse.
So
given his training, given his physiognomy or whatever, physiology,
yeah.
You name it.
So, you know, your horse's middle gate may be much bigger than my horse's middle gate, but he shouldn't be using that extended gate beyond what's comfortable for that horse.
And what he's trained at.
But the other thing that can make a tremendous difference is the conformation of the horse. You know, I had one horse that had 20 consecutive years in the sport, and that was a horse that was made to do what Dinah talks about, to hand gallop effortlessly because the way he was built. He had the long, sloping rear end. But
he also had a short stride.
He did.
At the trot, he had a short stride, so the canter was his gait.
Relatively short stride. I mean, for his size, it's probably long. He was only a 14.1 if I had let his toes grow long. You know, he was a short-legged horse, although very powerful. Then I've had another horse who's now done 15 seasons, and that horse is much more a trotting horse. He's a mountain horse. He's a trotting horse. But one reason he's had a long career is I haven't tried to do the fast, flat rides with him. I've sort of focused on the rides that where you have to do a lot of trotting because of the terrain, and that fits the way he's built. So
that's your super, is that it?
Yeah, super's made to trot. Drubin, first really good horse, was made to canter, and one way you can... And then I'll shut up and give it back to that. One way you can find out is get your horse going at a comfortable gait, at a trot, you know, not really extended, but just what really feels comfortable for you and him.
Easy. Watch
the pulse rate.
Yeah.
Then roll him into a comfortable hand gallop and see what happens to the pulse rate.
Yeah, I already know that one. He actually goes down just a bit.
At the canter?
Yep.
Then he's
the canter is his gait.
Yeah.
See, it's less stressed. The pulse will show you the stress. The pulses do lie, but generally speaking, if your pulse drops at the canter, it makes sense to canter.
He doesn't drop much, but he just drops a couple notches. This is probably a really good discussion for me, because what my horse does is when he gets into a race, he's adequately mileaged. But what he does when he gets into a race is he thinks, well, this is fun, and I'm happy. He goes at a faster, he goes at a longer stride and picks up his trot. It's very comfortable. I love it. But what you're telling me is that might not be good for him. Is that right?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think probably in the long run, if he's a fairly young horse in the sport, he's telling you that he'll the canter and alternate. I mean, don't get fixed on one gait, but the canter is a good gait for him. And the one thing that, and I've learned this the hard way, is you do need to have the horse trained that when you go into the canter, it doesn't mean you go into race mode and get race brain. I mean, the Steve and Dinah are masters at teaching their horses that, you know, a canter, a hand gallop means relax. It doesn't mean get excited. And in some way,
I'll tell you a brief story. My very first part Arab was an Anglo, and I thought I knew a ton back then. And I think it was in my early 20s. And I thought, okay, so this distance riding thing, I need to be able to, you know, go pretty darn fast. So I started riding this horse, and I had somebody clock how fast I could trot him. Now, mind you, this is back in the 70s.
No, not that old.
19 miles an hour. Doesn't even sound fast these days. The horse could trot 19 miles an hour. I blew both of his stifles.
Oh.
Trotting downhill at 19 miles an hour. And somebody, I can't think who, but somebody who knew a whole lot more than me sort of slapped me upside the head and said, "What are you thinking? I mean, you know, if it was a human runner and you did that to them, they would have, their hamstrings would be done. I mean, they would be done as athletes. And we have to feel, we really have to translate sometimes. I don't like to anthropomorphize horses because they are not human. But as far as body movement, huge steps are not in the best interest of the horse, of the distance horse. It is it's virtually never in the best interest of the horse for it to take the longest stride it can take. And I don't really, I cannot think of a time that that is ever the right answer for the horse. Now, it might be the right answer if you want to be the first person over the finish line, but it is not the right answer for the horse. And if you're going to do it, you have to train for it. And of course, selecting a horse with a long gait is a wonderful idea. But I personally, if I were advising you, I would say break into the canter rather than do the fast trot. Even though it's a fun thing to do, and do it at home, and, you know, train some there because you're going to get some benefit out of it, but do it judiciously, the same way as you would do interval training.
Okay.
And just as from my own experience, horses don't always come with good trots. They don't always come with good walks. And working those gates at home is, at least has proven to be, with my horses, an extremely important thing. And Stag will vouch for the fact that it pays off, because the horse that I've currently got, he came with an ordinary minus walk, an ordinary minus trot, and he's pretty slow at a canter. And after a couple of years, his walk got to be a real walk, and his trot is totally respectable.
Yeah, very.
And his canter, well, it's still not fast, but he's better.
But, and this horse, you know, the thing about when he's using now his trot and his canter,
it's so effortless.
He looks effortless, and then you realize that he's covering ground because he's just, the way he's built and the way he uses himself is very efficient, and he works at a lower heart rate than any of our horses, including Super, and has great recoveries. But a large part of that is a combination of conformation. He's just very efficient in training. My observation, the horse I ride, if you watch the horse I ride, now the younger one of the two I ride, and Cheryl's out in the field, my horse will catch her eye every time. He's such a flashy mover.
He's pretty.
And he's also, you know, flashy looking horse, but he's a flashy mover. Cheryl's horse, you'll sort of observe and say, oh, that's a nice horse, but nothing special. Then if you keep watching them for a while, you realize they're going the same speed. And then you start thinking, now, which one do I really want for an endurance competition? The one, given they're going the same speed, the one that looks flashy or the one that looks like he's not working? And
so one final thing on all of this is that it is believed in the dressage world, and they are fixated on gaits, that you can train a trot, but you cannot create a good walk and a good canter. You can improve on it, but if you have a choice, most dressage riders will pick a good walk, good canter, and build a trot, rather than pick a good trot and then try to build a walk and a canter. It's interesting. I don't know where I fall on that comment. I've heard it a number of times. I've been blessed with horses that had good walk, good canters, and really lousy trots. So I guess I kind of believe it, but I'm not 100% sure. I've never really had a brilliant trotter horse, so.
That's interesting, because I, just on my own experience with this one horse, his walk was nowhere. Now, at the same time, if I look at Super, Super's walk is unbelievable. And I'm pretty sure, I don't even remember whether he came that way, but he may have. It's just a really stunning walk. And if you could can it and sell it, the dressage world would buy it up in buckets. Because it's really that good. But I don't know that that's something that you can find it all over the place either, as you say. I don't blame him for going for that walk. It's that swinging walk is really a delight. And
is the walk always related to the canter? My horse has a really mediocre walk, but he's got such a wonderful balanced canter. It's very powerful.
Well, I mean, it may be that he doesn't choose to put much energy into his walk. I'm a walk freak. I want my horses, if I have to walk, I hate walking. So if I have to walk, by God, they better be moving. I mean, it better be moving, because I do not want one lazy step of walk. And Steve is perfectly content to just sort of laze along, and I will be riding together, and I'll look back. He'll be a quarter of a mile back, you know, in like no time. So I think there's part of it is a decision. I don't like a lousy walk, so I work on walk every single stride. Steve doesn't care. So his horses are perfectly capable of walking, but they, why bother? Nobody's making them.
Yeah.
So I think that to answer your question, if your horse has a good canter, he probably has a good walk in there somewhere. And some horses are blessed with three good gaits. So, you know, it's possible. But my understanding, and you know what, I don't know how much the dressage people know. I really, you know, I'm supposed to be one of them, but I'm still a distance rider. So I take everything they say with a grain of salt. And I don't know that it's true that horses that have good canters have good walks. I haven't looked at enough horses to believe that, but I do know in my experience, my horses that have had good canters have had good walks.
And how do you improve the walk?
Okay, alternate leg. So you're going along, the left shoulder is moving forward, your left leg touches them. Right shoulder goes forward, right leg touches them. It's sort of, you're swinging with them. So when that leg starts going forward, you're encouraging that leg to take a bigger stride. So if that makes sense. So it's left leg, touch, left side. Right leg, touch, right side. So you have to sort of watch the shoulder till you get the rhythm. Once you get the rhythm, it's kind of like dancing. It's kind of fun. And then they start swinging wrong, and pretty soon you can just use your hips to send them forward on one side, then the other side, the other side, the other side. But you have to make that step bigger while it's still in the air. Once that leg is on the ground, it can't move. So you got to do it while it's moving forward. That sort of makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Practice that.
So people will refer to it as alternate leg, using the alternate leg every time. So, all right. I think that we've any other things you want to talk about, or are we good? I'm Cheryl will be happy
to
give you my
pick Steve up. Yeah.
Yeah, but Cheryl, feel free to give my email to anybody, and I'll be happy to write them and chat with them or whatever.
Okay.
And hopefully we can go to Foxcatcher together.
Yeah, that would be cool.
And you guys really do need to come to Virginia 100. So, anyway, I will talk to you guys later. Take
okay,
care.
Great. Thank you again.
Bye.
Always learn so
much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Very useful.
Thank you.
Take care. Great. Bye.
Well, that was good. That was very good. Well, they should have talked about that before. This take is very good. Really good. And nice job cooking it. Looks really good.